we're actually going to have some time now for talk and discussion, even though we've been doing some talking and discussing already. I had a couple of really excellent questions during the walking period that I thought would be really good to address at the beginning of this talk for the whole group. One was about this balance between feeling our feelings and really kind of getting into and exploring and accepting and feeling and letting the emotions be a really alive part of our practice. And that, and then sometimes in the Buddhist sense, it feels like maybe we're encouraged to separate from our feelings and just observe them, not take them too personal, and have a sort of non-attached awareness of the emotions rather than feeling them too deeply. I personally tend to be very cautious about too quickly going to any kind of detached awareness. I think that it's very important for most of us. It depends. I think really it's one of those things where it depends on your relationship to emotions when you come to the Dharma. You know, if you're somebody who's been sort of detached and checked out from your emotions anyways, you probably need some real experience with diving into them and learning that it's safe to feel. Now, if you're somebody who's been sort of an emotion junkie, wallowing in your emotions and taking them way too personal, it will be quite useful to see that they're not as personal as you thought and that you can relate to them rather than from them. So I don't know that there's the one blanket advice that's good for everyone. But it does occur to me that there are different stages of, like, and I'll use my hands as sort of hand puppets, of kind of consciousness or and the emotion. And that often there's this enmeshment with the emotion where we take it completely personal as who we are. And we think that this, I am afraid. I am grieving. I am lusting, whatever it is. And it's enmeshed with our identity itself, and our happiness or unhappiness is completely dependent on what emotion is present. Sound familiar? I would call that attachment and identification and a kind of a clinging type of relationship to the emotions that are arising. Now, then there can be detachment, which is like, this emotion is happening and I'm over here observing it because I'm on 3 quaaludes and I don't have to really feel it. And I, or actually emotions have been, and the trauma in my life has been so painful that I've dissociated. It's so unsafe in my body, in my heart, to feel that I've completely checked out. I am now detached from emotion. And sometimes we do it spiritually too. We do it with we misuse our meditation to separate ourselves from what we've come to talk about, a spiritual bypass. And we say, like, oh yeah, there's emotion over there, but it's not me. Right? I believe that the Buddha was encouraging us to fully experience what is presenting itself, including all sensations and thoughts and feelings, emotions, with non-attachment. Now, non-attachment is being connected to. It is not being detached from. Non-attachment and connection, right? Clinging is digging the fingernails in and making a solid identity around it. Non-identification, non-attachment, is experiencing it fully, feeling, the emotion, the grief, the sadness, the fear, the craving, whatever it is, completely experiencing it, but without taking it on as who we are. And that's when the shift happens, the non-clinging, non-attachment shift happens from this is me and I am angry to actually there's a lot of anger arising in my experience. And I'm not separate from it. I'm feeling it. It feels like this tension in my belly and this heat in my chest and this clenching in my jaw and these maybe violent thoughts in my mind about how I want to not feel this way and I would rather you felt this than I felt this. But there's an understanding that it is not self, and that is a non-attached relationship to a feeling the feelings, not a detached. Does that make sense? It's the same thing in intimate relationships, not to shift too far, right? But there's attachment to each other. There's detachment from each other. And there's non-attached loving connection with each other. You don't have to be attached to be connected. Attachment hurts all the time. Connection doesn't hurt. Connection feels good. But when we cling, and you're changing and you're not behaving the way I think you should, I suffer. Or I'm changing, I'm not behaving the way you think I should. You suffer. But non-clinging, connection has room for change and for impermanence and for the unfolding of our partners. You didn't ask about that, but same hand puppets. The other question I got, did that make sense about feelings? Yeah, right? And it really depends. What's our tendency? If you wallow, then yeah, a little less, a little relationship to good. If you're really detached, yeah, get in there. Learn how to cry. Important. My first meditation retreat, 1990. Jack Kornfield. I heard him say, your Dharma practice hasn't really begun until you weep uncontrollably. Until your heart breaks open and the grief of a lifetime in samsara with impermanence and loss and until it just the heart floods. Then your practice really begins. And I heard that and I was like, what the F? I just got out of jail. I just want to learn how to meditate. What's all this crying business? And although now I understand what he meant, I actually copped a resentment against him. I mean, I love Jack and he's been my teacher since then. But I copped a resentment because, as I said before, I was doing these practices for years before I had much access, before they really uncovered that broken heart. I was so defended that I would do these practices and I wouldn't feel sad. I wouldn't feel compassionate. I was so detached, so suppressed, so defended. The armoring of the heart was so strong that it was several years into serious daily practice and retreat practice before I had this experience of the heart breaking open and the tears coming uncontrollably. So it's not, so my resentment was, that's because I felt like, hey, I'm serious. Buddhist, probably too serious in the beginning. My practice has really begun. What's he talking about? I don't have to cry to be Buddhist. It's bullshit. But in my experience, it ended up being quite true. And that I did, once the heart broke open, there was more access to compassion and more happiness. So afraid of emotion. Felt so unsafe to feel. And then it became clear that the Buddha was right, that the only way to freedom is through it, is to feel it completely, to turn towards the suffering in life and not away from it. Which is the second question that I got on the break, and it's such a great question. And it was about, you know, this is an insight group, and we tend to do metta, right? Loving kindness. And the person that asked the question was well aware that actually what I was teaching was more of a Tibetan practice called Tonglen. And it's very connected to metta and to loving, and I'm teaching Tonglen and calling it metta. and it's very connected, right? It's another Buddhist practice of the heart, of kindness, of compassion. And she was just curious about, well, why go with the breathing in the pain, breathing out the compassion approach, rather than just the metta approach, which is just sending out the kindness and the compassion out, 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 and no kind of in peace. One of the reasons that I've begun to practice and do Tonglen in this way, this kind of giving and receiving, the breathing in of the First Noble Truth, is because I've seen in my own practice and so much in the Buddhist community of using loving kindness with a subtle aversion. Let me send metta to these things that I don't really want to feel, and I will kind of loving kindness them away. Right, it's that difference sometimes in practice between letting go and letting be. Sometimes letting go has this subtle aversion to it. I'm going to let this go away right now. And letting be is saying, I'll let this be impermanent as it is, this emotion. I'll have room for it to be and to unfold in its own time and way, rather than I'm going to let it go away. So this process, the Buddha was so clear in the First Noble Truth that it's not just a surface acknowledgement of that there is suffering in life. He actually said that the task is to embrace it. And sometimes we skip that. We say, okay, yeah, no, suffering, I get it. Plenty of that, let me get rid of it. Because there's so much aversion. And then our practice is fueled by aversion, and we've skipped the first step. I forgot to turn towards the suffering. I had plenty, that's why I came in here. I was stressed out in the first place. You want me to look at it more carefully? Crazy? I believe that the Buddha was really asking us to look at it very carefully, to turn towards it, to stop just trying to get away from it, and to go into it and to say, yes, there's all of this sadness from a difficult childhood. There is all of this sadness from my heart being broken by impermanence 10 times so far this lifetime. To turn towards the dukkha, the first truth, to breathe it in, to meet it with as much kindness and compassion as is available now, knowing that that capacity will increase. Does that make sense of why I'm taking this approach? And it may or it may not fit for you. You might, person that I was speaking to at the break said, you know, I'm doing metta for myself for a year. Jack Kornfield had suggested that. I think that's a great suggestion. Do metta for yourself for a year. You don't have to switch to this practice. I'm just offering it as one of the many tools, Dharma tools, that I find really useful. And I find breathing in and out with the intention of compassion a really useful part of the practice, part of the Dharma tool. A couple more things. the practice this morning, in Vinny's meditation, he opened to the second foundation of mindfulness. We begin with breath, body awareness, present time awareness. And then we begin to investigate the fact that every single experience that we have comes with a tonal experience of being pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Right now, with your eyes open, there is a way in which your nervous system is experiencing the seeing as either pleasant or unpleasant or neutral. As the sounds reach our eardrums, every single sound is received in the body as a pleasant sound, an unpleasant sound, neutral sound. Smells, tastes, every sensation, and every thought. The more mindful we are, the more clear it becomes that we are constantly being stimulated by pleasure, by pain, or by neutrality, neutral, neither. And that the survival instinct, does that make sense? The feeling tone, you're seeing that, you've been practicing with that. The survival instinct of our species, the evolution, evolutionary fight or flight, craving, aversion, quality of the human experience, automatically meets pain with aversion. Anything unpleasant, the body and mind and heart, the human, pushes away immediately. Hates. The seeds of hatred are the natural relationship to painful phenomena built into your DNA, to our DNA. You see that part? It becomes obvious when you like stub your toe. You're like, fuck! I hate you! I want to kill you! You ever do that to your own toe? I have. That the body has very little tolerance for pain, naturally. Very little compassion. Very little natural compassion for our own pain. It's counter to the survival instinct. I see my 2-year-old daughter. We have not told her to hate pain. It's not a conditioned response. It's biological. She hates pain. She doesn't like not getting what she wants. She doesn't like getting what she doesn't want. All of us. Not your fault that you hate pain. Not your fault that you're not very good at meeting pain with compassion yet. If you haven't been practicing the Dharma for a while, it's not something that we're taught in third grade. And the flip side of our relationship to the instant biological clinging and craving for pleasure. That's what we were talking about before. I want it all. Built into all of us as a survival mechanism. We want pleasure. We want to get more. We want to accumulate it. And we would really like to hold on to it if possible. We don't understand impermanence. This is, I think, a core reason why the Buddha talked about the path as being against the stream. The stream is greed for pleasure, is hatred of pain, is taking everything personal in this mind and body, creating a self, a permanent self, out of this human phenomena. He's saying this path is teaching us that to go against the stream means to learn to meet pain rather than with hatred, with compassion. It's a radical undertaking that we're being asked. And to begin to meet pleasure with non-attachment, non-attached appreciation towards pleasure, with the fact that the I want the whole buffet feeling is never going to leave us. That's just a natural survival instinct. Oh, something delicious? All of it, please. How much would you like today, Hazel? All of it. How much you got? The practice of mindfulness leads to clear insight into impermanence, right? You see that through your meditation. You see everything's changing. Everything. And with the understanding that everything's changing, it becomes more and more clear that even though there's this tendency to want to grasp and attach and cling, the outcome of clinging is always suffering. Because we are like, every time we cling, it's like playing tug of war with what? Gravity or something. With a much stronger opponent. We can't hold on to anything without getting rope burns. Rope burns. The suffering is always the outcome of attachment. So then our goal becomes non-attachment. But again, right, not detachment, not I'm going to get separate from, in the midst of, non-clinging connection to. And our practice becomes understanding that the only wise relationship to all of the unpleasant sounds, smells, tastes, feelings, thoughts, is to have some compassion. Is to uncover. And that really, there actually is a compassionate and wise heart here. When I heard that, I was skeptical. If you're skeptical, I'm with you. If you completely believe that, I'm skeptical of you. But that it's actually true. But it's true as an experience. To be had, not a philosophy, not a belief system, not a religious structure to lay over us, but actually, as all of the Dharma is, to be experienced directly inside, from the inside out, knowing the truth that compassion is part of the wise heart. Underneath the survival instinct, what we call the obscurations and the defilements of greed and hatred and delusion, there is a maybe what the Tibetans call Buddha nature. What the Buddha referred to as the potential within every living being to experience nirvana, to experience freedom and awakening, and part of that. Necessity, prerequisite for nirvana, compassion. For sure, we all know that. But we have to battle our own survival instinct of hatred towards pain in order to develop compassion. Not just towards the pain of others, and so many of us are good at that. Somebody on the retreat at Gaia House said to Vinny something like, I'm pretty good at being compassionate and kind to others, but towards myself, that's just not very English. And it's not just not English, it's not very human. I got news for you. English, just part of the human conditioning. Of course, you have your own cultural conditioning, but it's just not very human. We're so externally focused. We're so looking out there for love, for happiness, for survival. To turn inward, to turn compassion towards ourselves, is rare in every culture. Maybe it's especially rare with the British conditioning. I don't know. Maybe it is. I think it's also, for sure, in the States, incredibly rare. And the Buddha said 2,500 years ago, to really walk this path, to really be a kind, compassionate, generous, mindful being, he said, I think only a handful of people in every generation will really want to do it. Or maybe it's not want, but will really do it. Again, because it's so counter to the norm. It's abnormal. What is normal and clear is to be in the future all of the time, planning. To be thinking about what's for dessert when you're eating dinner, that's normal. To be tasting every bite of your food, abnormal. Strange, right? Somebody asked a teacher that I was with recently about why? Why is mindfulness so abnormal? Why in the evolution of our species, why are we still such a struggle to be mindful and to be compassionate? How come we haven't evolved into mindfulness being a bit more natural? Compassion being a bit easier? He didn't know the answer, but he said something about maybe our species is just in its infancy still. We think we are kind of so evolved human beings, but maybe actually the human biped experience is still really just in its infancy. And that maybe in 1,000 years, if we don't destroy the planet and make it uninhabitable, but, you know, maybe in 1,000 years, actually, there will be an evolutionary leap forward where mindfulness does come more natural. Maybe this species will realize, maybe our bodies and the evolution of our bodies will realize, actually, mindfulness equals happiness. And it's a good thing for our whole species. Maybe it will become more mindful and more happy, more at ease, less suffering. And that we'll look back on our ancestors, you know, our ancestors of thousands of years in the future who are naturally mindful and more satisfied and happy, they'll look back on us and be like, they had to meditate. Poor Neanderthal. Sat around talking about kindness and compassion. Like we look back at, like, you know, that when they used to have to rub the sticks together to get fire. All we got to do is flip a switch. This is awesome. So advanced. Possibly. Maybe it will become more natural to us. But as it is now, it takes effort. But what a worthwhile and wonderful effort. As we all know, you're here. To practice the Dharma, to experience liberation. And it's where, it's like the alcoholic who then becomes grateful for having been an alcoholic and says, I'm a grateful, recovering alcoholic because the suffering of my alcoholism brought me to a place of gratitude and of spiritual practice. And now I look back on that suffering of alcoholism or of addiction with gratitude. And I think it's like that for the Dharma with the First Noble Truth. We look back on the suffering of our lives rather than with regret or with shame. Or we look back and we say, you know, the suffering that got me here, whether it was just stress or a heartbreak or whatever it was that motivated us to begin practicing with gratitude. I feel grateful for my third felony and looking at spending the rest of my life in prison, because it woke me up. It got me to the place where I was willing to meditate. And the last 23 years, I've been doing this practice. So amazing, so wonderful. So much gratitude for all of that suffering that gets us willing. And whether it's a, you know, whatever it is for you, it's different for each one of us. These are just some of my thoughts about the Dharma and about these practices.